Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go on the air?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show today. This is Marva Sneen. I am your host, Dr. Marva with Love, and I'd like to start off my shows by just saying this is the day that the Lord has made, and we will rejoice and be glad in it. Come rain or shine, it is a fabulous day. And, you know, it is Fabulous Friday, y'all. If you're in North Central Texas, then you know we have gone through the gamut of weather this week. We've had rain. We've had below normal temperatures. We've had extreme wind gusts. And now today, it is absolutely beautiful, about 45 degrees, maybe a little higher than that by now. Maybe we're in our 50s. The high is only supposed to be 64 today, but that's okay. So where are you? Where are you? You know, last week on the show, I started out with the question of the day. And last week's question was, who inspires you? And I told y'all who the person that inspires me, and that is Miss Cheryl Smith. She is my boss, and she is such a great lady, and she will go to the mat for you no matter what. If you're right or wrong, she's still going to go to the mat. You may get it, but she's still. And so she inspires me to be a better woman and do better and enjoy life. And so I want to just send that shout out to her, say I love you very much, Cheryl, and you do inspire me. Now, today's question is going to be about the holidays and the family. And so what are you doing for your holiday season that's coming up? And I promise you, y'all, it went by so fast. This year has gone by so fast. It's like we had the winter storms, then we had hot summer, and now we're at Thanksgiving and then Christmas. And then New Year, and we start a new year in 2022. Wow. So what is your plans? Are you cooking? Are you inviting? And which brings me to our guest today. We've got three incredible people that's going to come on and talk to us today. We have Miss Lee Higginbottom Butler, and she has a new app that's going to hit the market this week, and or on the 11th, I think it's hitting on the 11th, and it is a app for Black mothers. It is called Akin, which is Swahili for family. And so I just think that is so cool because Black mothers are dealing with a bunch of stuff. I mean, some mothers are single, some mothers have lots of children, more than one child. Some have job issues, and we gotta go back and forth between all of this. And so, we are going to welcome her, and she's going to talk about her new app that's coming out and how it's a community and it is resources for Black mothers that are dealing with everything issues that we deal with. Because, you know, they say that when other mothers of other races have issues, it's a tenth of what we have to deal with. Absolutely is. And then we're going to have Shalon Clark on. She is an attorney. She is a high-powered litigation attorney, but she's also an interior designer. So she's going to be talking to us today about how to make your home inviting and turn it into your guest bedroom into a hotel room. So when your family comes to town, it's going to be like they stayed at a hotel, but they stayed at your house on a budget as well. She's going to share all of those tips with us today. And then finally, we're going, and not least, of course, we're going to be talking with the president of the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce, Harrison Blair, and he and Chase Bank have a series about Black business that they are going to be, it's free, and they're going to be showing you how to maintain your money, make your money, maintain it, keep it from leaving out the door, and grow your business. And so I can't wait to talk to him about that too, because we really want to know, what does the Chamber of Commerce do for business? And is it important that all business be a part of that? So I'm going to ask him all those questions. And so anyway, thank you for tuning in today. Let's get right to some of the things that are happening. Now, in the beginning, I showed you our papers. Texas Metro News and Garland Journal both hit the streets this Thursday. Garland Journal is a biweekly publication, so it comes out on the first and the third Thursday. And then Texas Metro News Weekly, and it comes out every single Thursday. Now, we also have a daily newsletter we would love for you to subscribe to. So if you would go to editor@texasmetronews.com, that's editor@texasmetronews.com, then you can put your name and email address and we'll sign you up, and you'll get it in your inbox every morning at 7 a.m. How cool is that? You get to find out what's going on. And in today's newsletter, we have our Buy Black Business Spotlight. And, you know, we've been doing that since Pastor Haynes started this 100 Days of Buying Black Business. And he is calling it, he's acknowledging the 100th year commemoration of the Tulsa Race Massacre. And so the 100 days began on the 23rd, and it ends on December the 31st of this year. And in the call, Friendship West committed to economic justice in supporting Black-owned businesses, advocating for just lending practices, and working towards comprehensive, sustainable community development. And see, so you can go to their Facebook page and you can see all of those Black businesses that are on there, and you can support them. And if you want to know a little bit more about that, you can also go to our website at www.texasmetronews.com. That's www.texasmetronews.com. So here is our spotlight for Black business today, and it's called BF Configurations. Brian Fuellen is the owner of BF Configurations. He is also a member of the Fuellen family, who has a longstanding Dallas business history, a family operated company that has established in 2015. We are bonded, insured, and offer same day service throughout Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, Atlanta, 7 days a week. The team installers carries the necessary required tools and accessories needed to complete the installation of TVs, security cameras, security systems, or sound systems in the utmost satisfactory manner. Contact Mr. Fuellen at info@bfconfigurations.com, or you can call him at 866-573-5753. BF Configurations is located right here in Dallas at 325 North St. Paul Street, Suite 3100 in Dallas. So check them out. So especially now that the holiday season's to come, maybe you going to get yourself a new TV or you're going to get yourself a new security system. You want to make sure your home is secure. Check out Mr. Fluellen at BF Configurations. Now, for our superb woman of today is Lisa Hembree. Vibrant, focused, and a born leader, Lisa Hembree has been a star in so many arenas. Lisa Hembree is retired president, CEO of Literacy Instruction for Texas, the owner manager of March 4th Communications, a media branding and advocacy company. Lisa was the president and CEO of Dallas iMedia Network, and in 2002, she was elected Dallas County Treasurer. A graduate from Bishop Dunn High School, Lisa attended Fisk University before moving on to graduate from SMU with a BS degree in political science and government. Also received a marketing certificate from SMU's Cox School of Business. Lisa has served on executive committee of Dallas Arboretum and Botanic Garden, as a board member of Archives of Women of the Southwest and Executive Women of Dallas, Baylor Security Hospital, UT Southern Medical Center, Board of Visitors, Human Rights Initiative of North Texas Literacy, Texas and Trinity River Authority of Texas. Congratulations, Lisa Hembree, on being our superb woman today. So reach out to her if you know her and tell her congratulations. All right, now we're just going to keep on moving on until our guests arrive. Our first guest, like I said, let me just go there and give you just a little bit of background on our next guest, our first guest, rather. So our first guest is, sorry, I said that as soon as we came on the air. Let's see here. I'm just trying to pull it up for you so I can tell you all about Miss Lee Higginbottom Butler. Now, I'm going to give this introduction, but I really want to hear from her so that she can tell us all about it. Well, Lee Higginbottom Butler, founder of Akina, a social gathering community for Black mothers, aunties, bonus moms, and caregivers, will launch its official app on November the 11th in Swahili. For strong family bond is what Akina means. So I think that is so cool. It is the first of its kind social experience that nurtures Black mothers and women in an online environment that connects, educates, and inspires. With over 20,000 women on the wait list, Akina looks to launch as one of the largest platforms to date where Black moms can connect in a community like no other. Ms. Butler is a veteran communications specialist and mother of the all-in-one platform will act as a safe, nurturing space where mothers can come and garner support and essential resources, something Ms. Butler desperately needed following her own set of tragic circumstances that came just shy after the birth of her youngest son. So now we're going to talk to her. We're going to find out a lot more. And, and what happens with us women is that, when we I don't want to put this, when we run into tragedy, when we run into these things, this trauma in our life, we just kind of, first, some of us may freak out in the beginning, but then we kind of pull it together and we say, okay, so now what can I do? How can I change this narrative? Because it's not who I will always be. It's just here for right now, so I have to do something. And so anyway, Miss Lee Butler is here, and I'm going to welcome her to our show. Good morning, Miss Butler. How are you?
I'm well, Myrna. How are you?
I'm great. Can I call you Lee?
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you. So you are doing something that is really incredible. And, you know, and I guess people think about this all the time. Where can I get this resource? If I need this, if I can do this. And so, first of all, before we even talk about this, tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got here.
Right. So my name is Lee Butler, and I am a 43-year-old mother of three boys. They are 13, 12, and almost three. My children and my husband and I, we all live in Frisco, Texas, by way of Birmingham, but I am an original Fort Worthian, so I kind of grew up in the area. In 2017, we moved from Birmingham to Dallas, and I took a job, and everything was okay. We had just closed the business, so we were just relocating, you know, to Dallas. And about 6 months later, I was laid off from my job and found out I was pregnant like a month later. Things were a little different, you know, not having employment, not having insurance. My husband was underemployed at the time. He was trying to start another company, but also interviewing with lots of different companies here in the area, and just wasn't catching anything. So we went through a really, really tough time, so to speak. Financially, it was tough. We went from six-figure incomes, Cadillac insurance, village of many, many, many resources, contacts, all of the above, to nothing relatively quickly. And then factor in that a new baby coming. So kind of didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to turn. It's not the kind of thing that you want to talk to your family about. You know, it's not the kind of thing that you want to talk to your friends about, you know, without facing judgment. So I found myself kind of trying to figure it out and went on an app that is supposed to be for moms, and it is. It's a wonderful app for moms. They used a lot of beautiful Black women in their advertising, and so I felt, okay, this will be great. Find some moms in my area, and I'll figure this out, and at least, if nothing else, I'll have someone that I can talk to who doesn't know me and who won't judge. It didn't happen. While they use our beautiful faces and their advertising, those women are not on the app. And there aren't any resources that are for us, and there's not content that's for us. And so I thought, shoot, well, if you can't find it, you got to build it. So that's what I did. I set out on this journey, and now we have a fully functioning app. And we are on the Apple Store and Google Play, and in
you kind of cut out on that last part.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was just saying, I just want to make sure that I get this resource into the hands of the moms that need it the most.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I absolutely agree. Now, you say that as moms of Black children, that we navigate a special set of circumstances. So can you further kind of explain to our listening audience what you mean by that?
Absolutely. So if I can just be candid, you know, as Black women, we have to advocate for ourselves differently. As Black mothers, we have to advocate for our children differently. I have to teach my children what microaggressions are. You know, I have to pay very close attention to what the physicians are saying when I take my children in. You know, there's this thought that Black people don't experience pain the same way that other races do, that our skin is literally tougher, and so we don't feel pain. Our bodies are able to go through things differently than other races. This is what physicians are taught: Black, white, green, and purple. They're taught this. Candidly, I come from a family of physicians. My father was a physician, and his father, and most of my aunts married physicians as well. So I kind of have an inside track there, and was always able to turn to my family for anything that didn't feel right in the doctor's office. But I recognize that not everybody has that. Paying attention to those things, paying attention to those microaggressions, paying attention to, you know, why my child's fifth grade teacher put it in the back of the classroom when I knew he needed to be in the front, telling me that my child has a behavior problem, but I know that furthest from the truth from that particular child. Like, you just, that's just not him. And just recognizing that when things don't feel right, and being able to talk about it with a community of mothers that understand. They understand what's already understood. I don't have to explain the nuances of the microaggression. I might have to explain what happened. But if I say, you know, this didn't feel right, nobody's going to question me as to why. They're going to say, okay, I experienced this too. This was what I did. See if that works for you. That kind of thing. That's what I was trying to say when I was saying that we advocate differently, because we do. We have to pay very, very, very close attention to nuances that I don't feel like other races have to deal with.
And unfortunately, I mean, I don't think that's ever going to go away. And so with your app, this is, you know, some really good breaking ground for us and, you know, for mothers and grandmothers. I love you mentioned, you know, other moms and aunties and cousins, you know, because we're all dealing with something one way or the other. And so we need somebody that we can talk to. So what have been some of your challenges and even some of your setbacks when, you know, getting through this and getting it developed?
Excellent question. As a Black woman founder, obviously access to funding is a tough hurdle to climb. One of the things that they say is going for us, and by us I mean Black women, is that companies are willing to invest in Black women. You know, a lot of these companies say that, but I'm just be honest, show me where you are. Where are you? Because I can't find you. So just really trying to find access to capital has been a challenge. So one thing that my husband and I, he's my business partner, one thing that that we did was we started to focus on our mission and trying to find investors who were mission aligned. So instead of going after the huge VCs and just capital in general, we really wanted to focus on people who understood what we were trying to do, who really believed in the mission and who believed in giving back. And so that's kind of been the overarching goal that we have as a company. The other thing that's been challenging is, you know, being new in this space and this idea that, oh, you have to prove yourself or you have to, you know, amass this huge following of Instagram users and Facebook users and such and that, and you know, and I think that's fine. But one thing, how we got around that was we really started to partner with organizations that already had a community, that already, you know, had been doing this, and we explained what we were trying to do and brought them on as partners. So we have a very strict policy about give back to get back. So we are giving back a portion of our revenues to our partners, our nonprofit partners that are doing the work, that are getting the resources in the hands of the moms that are providing mental health resources, that are providing, you know, access to breastfeeding supplies and diapers and even financial literacy summit, and how do we apply, how do we help our kids apply for college, and how do we help our moms apply for business grants, things of that nature. So we're really trying to give back to those organizations that are doing that work.
That's incredible. That is really incredible. I like the way you said that. So now when you say, okay, so I'm going to do this, what is like the basic thing that you had to know to even get started when you talk about an app? Because I'm so not in that world. I'm not really familiar with that. You know, they say, well, you need to have this on your phone. You need to have this. And so it kind of explain that to us.
So that's a good question, too, because I had no idea how to go about this either. My husband and I had started a few companies together, but never anything that was an app or even tech-based, to be honest with you. So we just started doing the research. I got to say to your audience, if you have a dream, if you have an idea, the very first step is that first step, deciding to do it. Just decide to do it. A friend of mine said, you got to get off the fence. So if you have that dream, if you have something that you think is a great idea or something that you're super, super passionate about, I would just say that first step is deciding to actually do it. And then the next step is the research, figuring out how to do it. But figuring out your why and then your how, you're going to end up with a product. You're going to end up with your what. So, definitely doing the research. We started at square one, literally Googling, how do you start an app? What do you mean? Mm-hmm. So we started, you know, looking into these tech organizations that are sort of incubators for applications, and just started, you know, researching, talking to other people. Through those organizations, you can get in touch with other founders who are willing to share their knowledge. And so that's really what we did. We tapped into the community, honestly. I called friends who were business owners. I called my sister, who is she's got her own app. And, you know, I just started asking the questions, like, where did you start? How do I start? What do you think of my idea? Do you like it? You know, that kind of thing. And that's really kind of where we went with it.
Okay, so now what are your successes? Because, I mean, you are at the door. You are about to kick it in. And so what would you say your successes are?
I would say my first success is A, getting off the fence. Mm-hmm. And then B, actually getting a product. You know, this is a long road from idea to product. And so there's an actual functioning product that is on, you know, like I said, on the App Store and on Google Play. Mm-hmm. We have moms on the app, just came out of our private beta. So we've got roughly 300 moms on the app right now that have been testing, that have been communicating with each other, letting me know, you know, things that needed to be fixed or things that we could do better or things that we need to do more of. Mm-hmm. So I think that is probably my biggest success. And then we've got a wait list that's almost 20,000 strong. So, you know, yeah. I mean, the moms want it.
What does that mean, a wait list?
So with our partner organizations, we were able to get some of our partners to leave the platforms that they're on currently and migrate over to Akina. So their communities, and we're not including everyone because it's impossible to get 100% of anybody to do anything.
Right.
But we believe that with our partnership, this is what will come over. This is who has said to the founders of those communities, hey, I want in. Tell me when this is going to happen. They signed up for our newsletter, where they've signed up for the partner's newsletter to indicate that they want to move over to Akina.
So what is going to make, well, you'll be the only Black app for Black mothers out there. So what differently are you going to be doing or y'all doing in comparison with, like you said, when you first started, you tried to find some help and it's window dressing. So tell us how you're going to be different.
Well, let me say this. We are not the only Black mother app, but we are the only one that is an all-inclusive, taking you through the entirety of your motherhood journey. So a lot of apps tend to, after that fourth trimester, they call it, after your child comes out of that first year, they kind of, okay, so go find something else to do. Good luck to you, you know. So we really wanted to kind of pick up where they left off and carry you through, like I said, through grandmotherhood. So I just want to make sure that's clear because there are some fantastic apps out there for Black women who are pregnant or in that fourth trimester or even thinking about getting pregnant. So I don't, and I want to make that clear too. I don't want to take over anybody's space or lane or organization. That's not what we're here for.
No.
We are here to assemble the community and hand the expert the microphone. So that's, I'm not a mom expert. My kids will tell you that. But I do want to amplify the voices of those who are speaking to our community. And so to your point, what makes us different is, like I said, we are carrying you through grandmotherhood, but we are also, for the other apps that are just mom apps, right? We're really speaking to the Black motherhood experience. We are speaking to what we face, the fears that we have when we get pregnant, like how do we choose a physician? Then how do we choose a pediatrician? How do we get our kids into college? How do we determine whether our child is college bound and be okay with it? How do we find our child's passions, our child's talent? What is our child going to do? How do we guide them towards you know, career paths that they want to go down and keep ourselves out of that conversation, right? Because that's hard to do. You want your child to be a doctor or a lawyer, but sometimes the child's like, I would really like to be a chef. And that's okay. That is fantastic. So just kind of getting moms through all of that. But then also, how do we take care of ourselves? How do we figure out the right gynecologist for ourselves? How do we figure out a good rhythm with our spouse or with our partner, or if we don't have a partner, how do we figure out how to do this alone? How do we assemble a village around us that is going to help us get through these things? There's just, being a mom is a lot. It is a full-time job.
It is a lot.
Anybody who says it's not, come see me.
Exactly. Because I feel, tell me if you feel this way. As a mother, now I am probably, I'm like 20 some years older than you, but when I got pregnant, when I decided to be a mom, it was an automatic pilot for me, kind of like, okay, so mama did this, so I'm going to do this, you know, and now you have what I call the millennial mothers. They are of a whole different breed. They're not in that same realm with us. So like, you know, there's some challenges that we never even thought about. Like, here's an example, vaccine. We didn't think about that, honey. I rolled up in there and held my arm tight and got that vaccine, that polio shot, and, you know, cried like a baby. But some of our millennials now, they put their children on vaccine schedules, so they don't do them the way that the doctors have been saying, yeah, let's get this done. Do this at 6 months, this, at, you know, so they do it differently so these children can build their own antibodies and immune systems. So what do you think about that? Are your resources available for the new thinking mothers in comparison to old school girls?
So what we'd like to do is offer both sides of that equation, right? So So we have experts that are physicians. We've got a couple of pediatricians that are on our team who will be giving that information. We're going to do some question answer sessions with them, let the moms ask them high level questions about vaccine schedules and, you know, and all of the things that you think about when you're choosing a pediatrician or, you know, treatments that the pediatrician might like. There's been over the last 10 years this push away from antibiotics and not prescribing antibiotics, you know, in such a higher rate because it apparently makes the child, it suppresses their immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're building up, they're not able to build up antibodies on their own because they're taking these antibodies. So anyway, there's all of these things for us to think about. But then there's also the way that it's been done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you just got to figure out what feels comfortable and what feels right for you and your family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really where the conversation starts is, you know, you got your old school moms. That's what my mom and my mother-in-law say, old school moms.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got your quote-unquote new school moms.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that either one of them is wrong or right or doing things better than the other one is. It's all about feeling. As a mom, figuring out that balance and what feels right for you and your family and being okay and confident in that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want to arm our moms with the education and the support that they need to best advocate for themselves and their children. That's the whole point of this exercise. Asking grandmom, what did you do with this, you know, this happened and what did you do? Taking that advice and then coupling it with what the physician is saying and then figuring out, okay, it actually feels a little better for me to get these vaccinations, you know, out of the way and done. Because I know that it can be done, and I know that it's not necessarily harmful. So the physician might say one thing, and then you make a different decision, and that's okay, too.
Mm-hmm.
We're in control of our families and what decisions need to be made for our children.
Exactly, exactly. And that is such great information. So now, how will your app be or once you launch, how will women be able to get on your app? Tell us how they'll be able to do that.
Right. So we are available on the Apple App Store and Google Play. You just search for Meet, M-E-E-T,
mm-hmm.
Akina, A-K-I-N-A.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And download the app. And I think there's four or five questions they're going to ask you before you get on. And then you just pop on.
Okay. Okay, see, I think that's going to be great. I think that's going to be great. So now I had another question before we go.
Sure.
So what can our listening audience do to be a part of the online community that you have created for Black moms? So, I mean, do they just bring themselves? How does that work?
They just bring themselves.
Okay.
We are free for a limited time,
okay.
Completely.
Okay.
We will always be free.
Okay.
We will always have a free component with our resources and connections and our groups and things of that nature. Those things will always be free. We will be introducing premium content beginning of the year. We haven't quite decided what that's going to look like, but for the purposes of right now, we are free for a limited time.
Okay.
And all you have to do is just come and ask questions, engage the community. Don't be shy. We're a non-bullying, non-judgmental community. We stand behind that 100%. Yeah.
We've talked about your partners. So tell us about who some of those partners are.
Right. So I just brought on a CMO. Her name is Shatan Woodley. She is the founder of HU Mommies, which is a mommy group that is for alumni of Hampton University, which is my school. So she's come on as our CMO. We've got Jessica Jackson, who is our editor-in-chief, and she's come on from, she's got a online e-zine for Black mothers called Hey Black Mom,
mm.
And she's come on as our editor-in-chief to help us create content and write articles that are specifically geared towards our audience. We've got Kim Williams, who also has a community called Single Black Motherhood, and she's come on as our community manager. Lydia Harris, she is a doula and a sexual health expert, and she has come on as our social media manager, and also she's a content creator. We've got partnerships with podcasts like Thin Black Mamas, Good Moms, Bad Choices. My friend Megan Johnson out of Houston has a podcast called Don't Be a Momster that's available on the app as well. Fred Rovey is our CPO out of California. We've got a partnership with Milk Space. Milk Space is actually a Dallas-based company. She does pop-up events for she provides safe spaces for moms who are nursing to have a place to nurse during like events. So like Main Street Festival and, you know, these big events that happen, she will provide that space for nursing moms to have a safe and discreet place to nurse. Black Moms Connection, Tanya Hales is out of Canada, but she's got chapters all across the United States, and she's one of our partners. Tomi Akintunde from Mater Maya, she's got an online e-zine that is really like Black Mom Google. She's got all of the information, you know, that things that you would never even think about. I'm sure Tomi has written an article on it. These are our partners. So we've built a really robust list of partners, and I could go on and on and on with doctors.
I think that's great. I really do. I think that's great. So now, what about resources as far as, you know, this mother, she just lost her job, and she's about to be put out of her apartment, and the baby needs some milk. So how will she get some help with you?
Right. So we actually have a partnership with an organization called the Alignment Chapter. They are based out of Pittsburgh, but they provide tangible resources to moms in 32 states. When I say tangible resources, they provide things like toiletries, household cleaning products, diapers, wipes, things of that nature, things so that when a mom has to go to the store, she's not having to make a decision between buying toothpaste and buying food.
Okay.
So kind of freeing up some of the income to go towards food as opposed to, you know, these toiletry items. So that's one resource that we are pointing our moms in the direction of. We are also building out a list of national and regional resources, such as Frisco Family Services, which was there for my husband and I when we were going through our lowest point. You'd be surprised how many resources are really out there, and I would not have known if I didn't find myself in that position to have to look. But that's what we're really trying to focus on right now, is building out those resources and making sure we have accurate contact information and someone that the mom can contact directly.
Oh, right. Thank you so much for this. I really appreciate this. So remind us when the app will launch, and I will put in the chat again how to get the launch code in this.
Yes. Okay. So November 11th is our soft launch. We are available now. If you just want to hop on there now, you can definitely do that. We don't have any more invite codes, so it's just available.
That is perfect. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you again, Mrs. Butler. You've been great, and I mean, I hope our audience got a lot out of this. I was taking notes as you were talking, and I really appreciate the things that you were saying for us and Black women. It's great. So come back, you know, again, and we can talk even more.
So absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a great weekend.
You too. Take care.
Take care. All right. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That was great. Now, my next guest is coming. Before I get her, if you are a mother, a cousin to other mother or whatever, and you need some help, some assistance, she has great partners and resources to get you. And this app is going to launch tomorrow. I'm sorry, not tomorrow, the 11th, November the 11th, and it's meetakin.com is their website, or follow it at meetakina. Visit meetakina.com and then follow her, Meet Akina, on social media platforms. And you can go to the App Store now to get the Akina app if you are in need. All right? So thank you again. Now, my next guest, she is waiting, and before I let her in, I wanted to just share a little bit about her. And her name is Attorney Shalon Clark. Shalon Clark is a high-powered litigation attorney and partner at Hush Blackwell Law Firm. She was honored earlier this year as one of the Dallas Business Journal's top 40 under 40 and was also recognized as one of the top 50 multicultural lawyers in Dallas. However, with what many people don't know about Shalon is a budding interior decorator. She's a budding interior decorator and mastermind interior designer behind both Island Spot restaurants. Her husband, Richard Thomas, is the owner, the interior decorator for many area homes, and the founder and owner of her own design company, Your Design Redefined. And so we are going to welcome Ms. Clark. Good morning, Ms. Clark. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for that introduction.
Was
that me?
Cool is that, man. You are so beautiful. So let me just say, as I was looking at everything I could find on you, I only got a little bit, so can you just go ahead and start out by just telling us a little bit about who you are?
Well, my name is Shalon. I'm a wife to Richard Thomas, who is the owner of Behind the Island Spot Restaurants. We have two, one in Oak Cliff and one in Carrollton, and we're opening a third in Farmers Branch. I'm a mom of three baby girls, five, three, and one. And so I am very busy. And then on top of that, I am a partner at Hush Blackwell. So I practice commercial litigation. I handle business disputes. And I had this wild idea to also open an interior design business during the pandemic.
I love that. I really do. I really do. Because that was going to be basically my first question to you how does a high-powered litigation attorney become an interior designer and go, oh, I think I want to do this?
It has been something that was in the back of my mind for a while. And in a way, my husband kind of forced me into it because when we started the restaurants, he was like, I need you to decorate it. He gave me a budget of $500 for the first one.
Okay.
And he was like, you're the designer and go for it. We don't have anybody else. And then when he opened the second one, he was like, okay, I said, we had an architect. I'm like, can we just get them to do it? He was like, no, I don't have money for that. You're the designer. And, over time, and we also started flipping homes, which we would stage. And then the realtors would come and ask me, who did your staging? And he's like, my wife. And they started contacting me, asking me to help their clients. And so after about 7 years of doing this, I realized, oh, my gosh, people kept asking me. And I was like, I'm not a designer. I'm a lawyer. Go hire a designer. And I realized I had this whole portfolio I had built over 7 years. Like, oh, wow, maybe I am a designer?
Yeah.
And so during COVID, I feel like, for, just like for so many people, you just started realizing life is short. Mm-hmm. We lost some family members. I lost friends. I lost coworkers. And I was pregnant with my third. And I was just like, you know what? It's time to do a lot of the things that I had put on the back burner. And one of them was like, just open an interior design business and see what happens. Will somebody outside of your friends want to hire you? And the answer was yes.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I mean, I'm telling you, I think that is great. I mean, and just to have that, you know, on your belt, and you're like, okay, so I can do this. So tell us about some of the things that you have done in the design world that you're most proud of.
Oh, so the one I'm definitely most proud of is my childhood home renovation. Okay. And I started that in January. My parents came and lived with me while we finished it. Mm-hmm. My husband's gotten into the business too. So he's so supportive. It's like, whatever I want to do, he's like, I'll support you. Mm-hmm. So he's become my general contractor.
Okay.
And so he went and got a license and everything. Just, he's like, whatever you need. So we completely renovated my parents' house, the house I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it, after 30 years living in it, it has, you know, started to have disrepair, and my mom really wanted something new, and it was just so great to give that to them. One of the moments that I finally teared up, because so many people ask me, oh, wasn't it hard to, like, get rid of old stuff, and wasn't it emotional? The one time I teared up is when we hung the chandelier in my parents' dining room. So the entire time that I lived in that house, that room was empty and had no lighting. My parents, when they built the home, they had planned to buy a chandelier the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then came basketball lessons, private piano, you know, gold cards, and college tuition, and they just put themselves on the back burner. And it was such a beautiful room that never saw, you know, its glory. So when I saw that chandelier hanging, when I finally was able to do that for them, I was like, I felt just, you know, emotional. That, you know, your dream is to always be able to give back when your parents sacrificed so much for you. So that's by far my favorite project.
Oh, absolutely. So now, you know, the holidays are among us. I promise you, I went to bed and it was freezing cold in March, and I woke up and I am in November. And so
I understand.
So Thanksgiving, Christmas, then the New Year. So now, you know, COVID, our holidays in 2020 were, for the most part, I think they were virtual, you know,
yeah.
And so now maybe we're getting out a little bit more. So tell us what we can be thinking about, what we can be doing. And for some of us are on a budget, some of us don't have a budget, you know, what can we do?
So for decorating, I'll be honest with you, Marva. I am not a holiday decorator. That's not my thing.
Really? Oh, wow.
No. I am not a holiday decorator. I mean, I'll do a little bit of something for Christmas, but it has to be very modern. I have a very modern style.
Okay.
So the gallery is your friend when it comes to getting ready for Christmas, for sure.
Okay.
And I know, and I am the budget queen.
Okay.
Even my clients will say that.
Okay.
So I love to go on Black Friday to get really nice ornaments from the gallery for the Christmas tree.
Okay.
Because they're like 40% off.
Okay.
And I just collect them over the years so that, you know, because really a good tree has to have a bunch of stuff on it.
Okay.
So that's what I do for that. But as far as the holidays, I'm getting ready. I think a lot of people are now traveling again.
Okay.
So from going from virtual to now people are in person, I'm about to have 8 guests come in.
Okay.
And so what I've been focusing on is making your guest room ready to make your guests feel like they're coming into a hotel suite. That's always my goal.
Okay. All right. So tell us about that.
I'll just pick. I have like a whole list, but I will pick like 5, and you tell me when to stop.
Okay. Keep going. We love it.
So one, I think the most important thing is your bedding, because you want to make sure that they have a very comfortable rest, right? So, you know, I start with white sheets. You know, when you go into a hotel, you want to see white sheets. You want to make sure that they're clean, right? And so I think starting with a white basic sheet, either linen or a high thread count Egyptian cotton, that's nice. You want to make sure it's comfortable. I like to do a duvet. And downfill the duvet, and then you never know, like, how people like to sleep with their temperature, so I always include a throw on the end, like, maybe they'll get cold, you want to make sure you have that on the end of the bed. Make sure you have 2 kilos per person, and I like to vary up the firmness and softness, like, maybe you do one feather and one something else.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and for people that have, like, small spaces. You know, I do people that have those questions where, like, I don't have a dedicated room or I can't, you know, this is also doubles as my office. There are lots of affordable foldable beds on Amazon. They fold completely collapse up when you're not using them. You could even use an air mattress for those so that you can deflate that. So there is no reason that you can't provide a great bed for your guests. And one of the other things for sleeping is you want to have room darkening shades or curtains. You know, when you think about when you're in a hotel, the reason you sleep in and the reason you sleep so well is because there's no sunlight bothering you in the morning. Right. So definitely do that. Those are also available on Amazon. Yeah. Secondly, their belongings. So I just purchased some collapsible luggage racks. And, you know, when you think about it, when you go to a hotel room, probably the first thing I do is put my luggage on this luggage rack. And so to be able to find, to have that small touch in your home is a really good thing. And they really, I just found some yesterday, $29.99 at Bed Bath & Beyond. So completely accessible, but that very nice touch of your client, your guests do not put their luggage on the floor. And in that room, I would also make sure you clean out your closet, give them a, so they don't feel like they're going through your things, or and give them some drawers. And for the third thing that I really like to do for the bedside is to give them some water. Like, I like to do fruit-infused water, lemon, cucumber, in a carafe with 2 tumblers on the side. You know, if they need water in the middle of the night, they're not really going bumping through things in your house. And just those small touches. And, of course, you know, your toiletries, having an extra toothbrush, having an extra toothpaste, getting those bars of soap, you know, the really big luxury bars of soap you can find for like $4 at Ross. But extra touch to the bathroom so they feel like you've really prepared for them and laid out for them.
And I promise you, they're not going to want to leave. They're not going to want to leave. They're going to want to stay. They're going to want to stay. Oh, my goodness. And every time something's happening, they go, can we come stay with you?
Yes, I know. That could be the problem, and I'm not sure I could help you with that part.
Oh, my goodness. So now, I know you said you don't really do a lot of holiday decorating, but how would a person, you know, want to just do a little something that kind of moves them from Thanksgiving into Christmas? You know what I mean? You know, you want the fall look out, you know, you want, or the winter look out, you know, what would be some really inexpensive ways to do that? You know, in your living room and kitchen area, whatever, because I feel like that's the big focus of everybody's house is that, you know, kitchen and living area, you know, where the TV is.
Yeah, no. So those are just changing your accessories to darker colors.
Okay.
You know, yeah, and navy blue is a really popular color right now. You know, you have your grays, and you just go from your bright summer colors to changing your pillows out, changing your throws out. You know, you might change your candle scent to something a little heavier. Those are the things. And, you know, you can do all of that in home goods. Any of those things. Yeah, that just kind of bring in the winter. Yes, I know what you mean.
You know what
Make
I mean,
it a
right?
Cozy.
Yeah, you want it to look a little bit cozy. Oh, wow. This is really great. This is some really great information. So how can people get a hold of you and, you know, find you and get you to come do their house?
Yes. So my website is Shalon, that's C-H-A-L-O-N, at Your Design Redefined.
Okay.
And I hope that name is catchy and interesting because
it
I try to come in and take your design, not totally recreate or insert myself, but take specific things about you and your personality and just redefine it. And so Shalon at YourDesignRedefined.com is how you can reach me. And I'm also on Instagram at Your Design Redefined.
Okay. Shalon at Your Design Redefined. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. I'm gonna try and put that in our chat. And now you know, we didn't talk about much of your law business, but you know, has that taken off? What did COVID, how were you guys affected during COVID?
Oh, yeah. So at first, it was, as a litigator, it was very slow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really kind of worried about my job, to be honest.
Okay.
Because all the courts closed. And so every, you know, nobody was traveling for depositions. And so it just slowed down to a halt. But and then I went on maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back, it has been crazy busy, especially this year. I mean, everybody I talked to is just drowning in work. And the courts are opening back up, and so litigation, you know, everybody's just ready to sue now.
Okay. Oh, wow.
I have truly never been busier in my entire career than I am right now.
Wow.
Truly.
Oh,
so
wow.
So what a time to open a design business and have a new baby. So it's
yes, yes. And so how old is your baby?
She is 13 months.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my
yes.
goodness. So they keep you busy, those little girls.
They do. They do. And it's a balance. It's a struggle every single day to make sure that you have time for your children. If I didn't have support, my husband is a super dad. And then my mom is my nanny full time.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So she comes here every day at 7:30 in the morning and keeps the kids until I stop working. And then I try to stop working by 5:36, 6:30, and then spend time with them until they go to bed, and then at night I start back up on design.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so how do you manage to separate the two, you know, of your law career and then your design and your family? So, because Black women are doing this. I mean, we are doing this. So how do you separate it?
You know, the best advice I ever heard was from Judge Tanya Parker.
Mm-hmm.
She said, it is not about work-life balance. It's about work-life integration. And
oh,
I never
wow.
thought of it.
I like that.
I just had like a aha moment when she said that.
Uh-huh.
And so one thing I've noticed with design is a lot of my legal clients have ended up being my design clients. it makes
That's
me,
great.
You know, it actually increases what you want from your lawyer is you want a trusted advisor, a trusted counselor. So now that I'm in their personal space, learning more and more about who they are, it actually strengthens the legal relationship. And so just not trying to separate the two.
Okay. Oh, you found a way for them to work together.
Exactly. And even with my kids, if they come interrupt me and I'm doing a design, you know, a CAD or something for a client, I've gotten my 5-year-old involved and she'll sit next to me and draw out her own little thing. She'll say, look, you should put the couch here and this and that, you know.
Oh.
So just making it fun and making it a part instead of trying to just, this is my design time. This is my mom time. This is my mom time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just trying my very best to integrate.
That I like that word integrate because that actually works for me, too. You know, just try to integrate all the things that we all need to be doing or we can do. So now let me ask you this. You've heard about, you know, the latest with the vaccine. So now are you and your family vaccinated? Do you plan to have you said you have a 5-year-old.
So now they're doing 5 to 11. What are your thoughts on that?
Me and my husband are vaccinated. With my husband being in the restaurant industry, he was the very first one. And then I did it when we decided we were ready to start traveling again, because we travel to Jamaica quite a bit. My girls, I'm not ready for that one yet. So far, my five-year-old does go to school. They wear masks. Mm-hmm. Not had any outbreak in their class in this last year and a half. So I feel like I'd like to wait a little while before I do that for my kids.
Because, there's been so much controversy over it. And I mean, in some school districts and, in some cities, just fights over it. Yeah. No, I'm not going to do it, So I just wondered because my kids are grown and my grandkids are teenagers, so and their parents are making that decision. For me, I felt like I should have it done.
I think I just want to wait a little more time till we have a little bit more information before I start doing it to my kid, especially when there hasn't been any issue. Mm-hmm.
Now I've heard about Pfizer has a pill. Have you heard about the pill?
That.
Yeah, no. Pfizer has a pill that they are trying to get through FDA, that taking this pill, you will be able to not, if you get COVID, then you won't, get deathly sick and end up in the hospital on a ventilator, So it's kind of like, I don't want to say an antibiotic, but basically, something to that effect, though. And I saw that in the news this morning. So I thought, wow, this is something else. So now you said you guys are back in the courtroom. And so so now you're not having to do Zoom anymore. So
some judges still are doing it not in person. And some judges are giving you a choice. And mm-hmm. some judges are mandating that the hearings are in person.
Okay.
So far, I haven't had to go to any hearings in person, and I actually appreciate that. I know lots of people think litigators are extroverts, and that is not the case for me. I am an introvert, so not having to go to court has actually made me a happier lawyer. So I appreciate the judges that have given us a choice, but I have definitely done in-person depositions. But I think that it has been so good for the legal industry to realize that we really can be flexible. Mm-hmm. I've spent, 45 minutes driving to court for a 2-minute hearing.
Okay.
And I think we've realized how inefficient we've been. Mm-hmm. And when you bill by the hour, mm-hmm. it matters.
It really does.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense. That does. That makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
The pivoting that we've all had to do, right?
Absolutely.
I don't believe that we'll go back to business where companies were having their employees go to business meetings flying all over the country. I think those days are gone, because once Zoom, then they can be right here and they can save so much money. So that means they can pay their employees much more money, because they don't have to pay for those excursions,
Absolutely. I mean, our firm did very well last year, and part of it is saving expenses. I mean, and I think that's the same for a lot of the companies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, the companies are finding that not necessarily everybody even wanted to go on those business trips.
Right.
Like me.
Right. That's true. That is so true. Oh, my God. This has been a great interview, Shalon. Thank you so much for coming on today and talking about, design and what you do. And I look forward to seeing more of you. I really
do. Thank you so much. You have been a delight to talk to.
Oh, well, thank you. And now you have a wonderful weekend and a great holiday season. And hopefully you and your family will get to do just a little bit of traveling and enjoy. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. You have a great day. Bye-bye.
Oh, that was wonderful. She's a great lady. Great lady. Her name is Shalon Clark. She is a designer, and you can reach her at shalon@yourdesignredefined.com. That's Shalon, Shalon, at yourdesignredefined.com. All righty. So now we are getting into home stretch. It is 10 minutes after the hour and 50 minutes before the top of the hour. And again, I just want to thank you, and I want to thank my guests this morning that has been on the show. It was great. It was great. It really was. So we had Miss Lee on the show this morning, Lee Higginbottom Butler. She is the founder of Akina, and Akina is a new app that is for Black mothers from the cradle to grandmotherhood, all of the things. It's just being a Black mother in life, and we needing some help and some resources, and she's got them, and she's got them all together working for you. So please, if you want to get this app, it's free right now. Just get on anywhere, Google Play or Apple, and get you an app, and get and it is called Akina. That's A-K-I-N-A, and it's in Swahili. It means family. All right. Well, good morning, Mr. Wiggum. Thank you for tuning in this morning. How are you? I hope you had a great week. I hope all of you have had a great week, and I look forward to it. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about our next guest that's going to be coming on here shortly. We are going to be talking to Harrison Blair, and he is the president of Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. And Harrison Blair is the president of Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. The Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce has partnered with Chase Introduce, a free three-part workshop series on generating and retaining cash flow for one's business. I think that is phenomenal. Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce was founded in 1926. The Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce serves as an advocate for the creation, growth, and general welfare of African American businesses in the Dallas County community. The chamber actively promotes the expansion of business opportunities of our membership through referrals, partnerships, seminars, technical assistance, and marketing. The chamber focuses on advocating for economic and business development, education, and special projects. Our membership is the pivotal component for our success. The only way we make a difference. We commit to leading education and advocating in the Dallas business community, making the North Texas region a great place for our members to do so. Now, I just read you from the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce website, and that's what their mission is, and that's what they are all about. So as Mr. Harrison, Mr. Blair comes on. He's not on yet, but he'll be on shortly. So we will talk to him and just kind of know, you know, I want to know about the Chamber of Commerce. I want to know about them. I want to know about the Black Chamber of Commerce. I want to know, you know, what can they do for Black business. So Mr. Harris is here. So we're going to invite him on. Hello, Mr. Blair. How are you?
Ms. Love, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me here, Ms. Marva. How are you doing today?
I am great. Thank you. So I read a little bit about, you know, about what you guys are doing with Chase Bank. But first of all, introduce yourself to us, because you know, I've known you, I've seen you around town and stuff, and you're a great businessman. So just tell us a little bit about who you are.
Oh, Ms. Marvin, thank you so much for the opportunity to be on your show. This is a huge opportunity for us, and I'm glad to be here. My name is Harrison Blair. I serve as president of the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce, which is the oldest Black Chamber in the nation's history that's been continuously running. And our tagline is Constructive Leadership Since 26, and that constructive has a lot of different meanings in it in terms of the work we do and how we serve our mission.
That's wonderful. So are you a Dallasite?
I am originally from Dallas. As far as I know, we go at least 3 to 4 generations back. My family has had a family newspaper here. You know, we bought ink by the barrel. Uh-huh. Talk about all of the great things happening in our community. I live in that legacy. So it's on my grandfather, my dad, my mom, those folks' shoulders I get to stand right now.
Yes, you do. That's so awesome, isn't it? Is awesome and what a blessing. So let's just go ahead and kind of get right into this. I was reading a little bit about the chamber and stuff, and so, you know, for a lot of people, they may not really know what the chamber does. Can you tell us exactly kind of what does the chamber actually do, and why would a person want to be a business person want to even be involved with it? Can you explain that to us?
So, Ms. Marva, the history of the chamber really gives us a great intro to what we do every day, day to day. And since 1926, we've existed primarily as an advocacy arm for Black businesses. It's one thing to provide resources for an organization, but it's another to make sure that your posterity will be able to partake in business in this region. And for us, it's been critically important, the advocacy piece, because you've seen rollbacks of all kinds of legislation that has protected Black citizens. And if the Black citizen is not protected, then how can we protect the economics of the situation? So we advocate quite a bit. I spend a lot of time writing letters with special advocacy groups, gathering businesses together and talking about issues that impact businesses in this region. And since there are so many African Americans here in Dallas, I believe the number is 1.2 million in this region. And we're between here in Houston, where there's another 1.3 million African Americans there, then there's just a lot of advocacy that needs to take place, a lot of ecosystem building to make sure that businesses can compete from our community. And, you know, aside from the advocacy piece, we also provide a lot of services to businesses. A lot of times, we see businesses that are in growth mode. They do great business, but their only marketing is by word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So they need membership spotlights. We help them to market. You don't have marketing that's snazzy and looks like, million-dollar marketing from the press, then we help. We have a lot of different partners who also are engaged in helping Black businesses. Congressional Black Caucus put out studies every year, and in 2019 and 2020, they talk about why Black businesses typically fail in comparison to other businesses. And aside from capital, knowing one another is a huge hurdle for Black businesses across the Metroplex. So a lot of what we do also is connect businesses so that they can talk to one another. And we've seen a lot of great relationships come from that, especially in the pandemic, businesses really putting all their resources together, pooling them and becoming a new entity just so they can survive, or folks figuring out a way to become a conglomerate and go global. So there's a lot of work that goes into it, and each case is totally different. But really, we serve as a harbor for all kinds of businesses and different types of transactions as well.
Wow. I think that's good. So the next thing is, what about this series, and what do you guys hope to accomplish in this series? Can you tell us about your Advancing Black Business series?
Absolutely. This Advancing Black Business series is a partnership between us and JP Morgan Chase, and they have a special division called Advancing Black Pathways, which includes advancing Black entrepreneurs and a host of other programs that they serve across the nation. And they try to go to hubs that have a lot of activity and a lot of access to Black businesses. So, of course, they partnered with the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce, and they want us to put on programming that would allow us to serve our mission to help businesses with special resources, special knowledge. And in this particular series, we're talking about cash flow. And people ask me, well, why cash flow? Why are you focusing in on that particular metric? Well, I believe that cash flow is one of the most important metrics of your business. if you're looking at your profit and loss statement, you can talk about a lot of different metrics and a lot of different numbers. But when it comes to funding and it comes to investors wanting to back you or a bank wanting to really look at your records and those numbers, that is a number that they spend a lot of time on. And we want this program to really help business owners to change their mindsets around how they're looking at their P&L and what it's going to actually mean if you can utilize the levers of cash flow. You know, when we think about cash, cash is very stagnant. Cash is what you have on hand. It does not move as much, but we call cash flow currency because it's always moving. It's always moving through your account. And if the P&L is the speedometer that tells you how fast you're going, cash flow is the fuel that moves your business. It's what investors can put their hands on. Mm-hmm. Whereas philosopher Drake may say, don't show me a valuation, show me the cash.
Okay.
Show me the cash flow.
That makes sense. That makes absolutely sense. So what are the cash flow basics, I mean, for a business?
Well, you need to know about the levers in terms of time. You know, what kind of time do you have to pay your vendors? What kind of time do you have for your vendors to pay you and the people you're partnering with? What, you know, what other types of capital do you have access to? Are you using your retirement fund? Are you borrowing against it? Mm-hmm. Are you leveraging any kind of friends and family realm before you walk into a bank? Or are you even looking at your cash flow as a primary tool that you can leverage for your business to really get things moving forward?
Mm-hmm. So you want your money, you want it coming in, right? You want it coming in at as fast a rate as possible. I mean, you know, but then you want it to slow down on going out. So you want to have to figure out how to reserve, be in reserve. And so what are some of the I would call it the cash flow destroyers. This destroys your cash flow. You know, what are some of those things?
Well, one of the major dysfunctions that we see when businesses come to talk to us with cash flow or with regard to cash flow is that they're not using it as a metric. So their, you know, the operations may not be airtight. And you alluded to, you know, how much time you may have to pay a vendor, how much time a vendor may have to pay you. If that's out of whack, that's one of the first things a bank is going to take a look at. They want to know if they're going to fund you based off your inventory and how quickly you can turn that into cash, how quickly you can get that back. So those are some metrics in terms of operations. Where are you spending your money? Are you marketing? And is that marketing working? What is your number one cash flow positive revenue generator? And a lot of times it's your customer service. It's how quickly you can repeat making your customer happy. And a lot of times when we talk to businesses about their cash flow, we're really looking at operations. Are you looking at what your competitors are doing? What's working for them that they're utilizing? What's not working? Where do you see some low-hanging fruit in the market that you can do differently than anybody else? And the metrics that Chase and the presenters that we're going to have go through really covers stuff that the Chamber is utilizing. You know, how did we grow in a global pandemic? How did we continue to add staff and continue to add members? What was our service offering? How are we able to keep members happy? Are we able to keep members happy in a repetitive stance where we can continuously see that cash flow? And at what point do we know how much do we need to raise? How do we put those metrics together? A lot of businesses are going to the bank and they just kind of put down a number. This is what I think we need. And they've probably, you know, looked at all kinds of metrics and really gotten some information about the industry. And they're trying to utilize that to figure out what their growth metrics are. But we want to look at the actual metrics of your business, how you're doing, your operations, and ask those critical questions and start to break down what you actually need in your business, what the bank may actually loan to you. And not only the bank, but also angel investors, folks who want to be a part of it. And this is also for venture capital raises as well. You know, when you start thinking about how do you attract some of those different dollars to get into your business, or how do you break into some of these industries?
Well,
so a lot of the focus there.
Well, let me ask you this now. As a business person, what is the percentage of marketing you should be spending your money on? I mean, you know, if you're looking at the whole pie, 100%, how much of it is marketing? How much of it is utilities, and your rent and all that, and then products? So how does that break down?
So at least on the marketing piece, and shout out to Risa Agency who did a training for our cohort on this, you should be spending an average of about 12% of your budget on marketing. And that's just to start out. You may be looking at how the marketing is starting to impact your business. But then you want to look at programming. You know, how else can you include your marketing budget so that you can really branch out and spread out? Should you add a person for your marketing team? Are some of these things you should be doing for yourself? And when people start to, you know, push back on why I shouldn't spend this much with this vendor for my marketing, or I really shouldn't be working with a PR firm like Think3 Media, you know, it's just too expensive. Then we start to break down what the return on investment may be if you're not talking about your business, or if you think word of mouth is going to move the numbers that you're trying to reach. It's going to take an investment. And we tell people typically you want to start at about 12% for your marketing budget so you can really start to walk out what you're going to do, and you can start to capture the return on investment for what you're putting in the business.
Yeah, and if it's and if the business is retail, then what is the breakdown on goods? How much you should be, you know, spending on your goods, and how much, you know, what is your markup going to look like?
So, and this, we get this question a lot as well, but it really varies based on the type of industry you're in, what kind of goods you're selling. You may be selling a very high-end good, but the margins are not as flexible as you'd like them to be. So you may be spending a lot for that good, say like an electric car. Mm-hmm. So it may cost, you know, X to produce this electric car. And so once you've gotten that broken down, you can kind of see what your margins will be for everything else that you're going to be spending. Or your margins may be much better for a widget. You know, I don't know if you remember those spin finger deals.
Yeah.
Those are pretty cheap to produce.
Right.
So then what do you charge for it? So then the conversation is around, what should I charge? What is it going for in the market? And this is why we look to competitors so often, because I want to see what competitors are doing. What are your competitors doing in this industry? What are they charging? What does the product actually do, and where do we see value? And another question we also ask a lot of business owners that sometimes they have worked out, a lot of times they don't, is what is the lifetime value of your customer?
Right.
That's something that's also a bankable metric when you're going to talk to funders. What is the lifetime value of each customer, and at what service offering? And then from there, you may have a product that goes with a service. So where can you get those upsells to really bring in more margins on your revenue?
I really like that. I really like that. What is the life of your customer? That is really good, because as a rule, what is the loss of customers per year? Because you're going to lose some business. And so what does that percentage look like?
Well, this also depends on your industry.
Mm-hmm.
Some businesses, like if you're in the porta potty business, nobody cares what kind of porta potty they're offering.
Okay.
They want to know, you know, if they can get a cheaper porta potty, because if, you know, even if it has a name on it,
right,
unless it's luxury porta potty or something
okay.
like that.
Okay.
And even then, it doesn't really change based on the company. You just want to use restroom if you're at an event, or if you're working outside and you need access to a facility to use restroom. So it just depends on your industry. You may have some industries where, you know, like porta potties, you're going to lose customers at probably a 5 to 8% rate, because they just want to get the cheapest porta potty. And so you're always adjusting your margins and adjusting your price to stay competitive. Or you may be somewhere like Apple, where they don't budge and they don't lose a lot of customers, and they just continuously release a lot of product. So they're at the bottom of that ratio of losing customers. But then they also have to compete with Samsung and all the other big producers who are also coming up with new features. So that could change the ratio every year. And that's why, you know, people like Elon Musk will say, you know, maybe too many MBAs out there. Because really business is, you know, is feeling your way through the market and learning all the new practices in business in the industry. And if you're not taking 30 minutes at least a week, and that's at the low end, to learn what's happening in your industry and just stay on top of that, then you won't be on top of how the metrics may change your business, or, you know, what that'll do to client loss and client retention.
And that is true. That is very, very true. You got to know what's going on. So now, how are you getting customers? How is the business, what is the best way to get a customer?
I think the best way to get customers is, one, to have a product that actually works. And especially in the tech industry, I can tell you, there's so many new apps that come out that are supported by this app or on this platform, and they don't necessarily work. So
okay.
Firstly, make sure whatever product or app or technology you're utilizing or serving actually works. And then, of course, to retain your clients and keep them coming back, put processes in place to continuously make them happy. So even if you got to automate parts of what you do to keep them. And then, of course, your marketing arm. You got to be telling people about your wins. We do a lot of this in the nonprofit sector because if you're a nonprofit, you got to have your board out as your best ambassadors talking about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And for us, what it looks like is story sharing. Every week, my staff wraps up some stories of how we've served members or some kind of economic impact in the space that we've been able to achieve. And we try to put that into a little story soundbite that we can share in an email to board members and to members and let them know, hey, this is something you can share with, you know, Ms. Marla, if you see her at the store, she may ask you, hey, you Black Chamber, I heard y'all did something. How did that go? Or, you know, what about this new event or this new program? And if you can tell them that we served this many businesses and this many folks got funded and it created this many jobs, then people see a value in it.
Okay.
And, you know, at the Chamber, I tell folks, you know, all the time that when I started, it was really a turnaround because the Chamber is 95 years old. So it wasn't doing anything terrible. It just, the metrics around the market had changed. And what were we doing to serve businesses in this new changing economy? And so we had to start marketing what those changes were, what we were doing to address them, and how we could better serve businesses in this new ecosystem. And this is critically important if you look at 2019 and 2020. Mm-hmm. In 2019, I guarantee you the pandemic shifted that business model, that focus, the way you approached your clients, and how you did business, especially if you were a service offering for like the Chamber. So I think, you know, getting clients is really providing them a great service and then making sure that the world knows what you are doing and how you're doing.
So let me ask you this now. You just brought up something that's really kind of piqued my interest. So how did the Chamber help those businesses during COVID that were trying to get PPP loans?
So this was one of our biggest wins.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
This past year, we had a member who actually approached us. He had been at a tech event that we did last year called the Executive Business Summit, and he saw what we were trying to achieve with that program, just inviting tech companies to be a part of the Chamber and figure out what infrastructure we could build. And at the top of the pandemic, we all had our faces in our hands. We were trying to figure out what we were going to do. The chairman and I had some very tough conversations with the board, and we pulled together a plan to go virtual. And in that virtual offering, we utilized this member. He came to us with an app that he had been working on, and he was one of the only Black teams that was working with the federal government to make this PPP app work. And his team didn't get selected, of course. So he said, hey, I've got this technology. Would the Chamber allow me to pilot it so that we can help Black businesses? And this app was so powerful because it already understood some of the red lines that may keep Black businesses from getting that kind of funding. Mm-hmm. And mostly, it's a bank is a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
If your grandfather got a crop duster for his fields, you know, 50 plus years ago, and then his son walked in and got a loan, and now you're starting a business, the bankers know that they can trust that family, it's bankable, and they're going to loan to you. Well, in a lot of instances with Black businesses, there was no relationship. And when you look at the banking system and the way it operated with regard to relationship, we'd always been outside. And the same was true for many of the services that the government offers, like the Small Business Administration. And it wasn't that they weren't trying to loan to us, they weren't trying to work with us, it's that the federal boxes that existed didn't allow businesses to easily get access to that funding if you weren't inside the system. And what are some of those red lines? Having your quarterlies done, filing your taxes regularly, paying your taxes, making sure that you've been on top of all the different regulations that may arise that the IRS is going to ask about when you apply for funding. So a lot of businesses weren't able to get access to it. But those who worked with us, and we took some stats on this, 97% of the businesses that worked with the Chamber were able to keep their doors open because they had access to not only PPP funding through this app, but they also had access to grants and different programs and offerings. And they got some coaching from us and partners. But mainly, this app allowed us to not have to get an army of volunteers in to break down shoeboxes of data and information, but it allowed the app to parse information from questions it would ask, fill out the application for them, and help them get quarterlies and other pieces of information pulled together because the app also understood all the guidelines and code that went into the application. And this was critically important because if a foundation or a group started to offer their own grant, they would copy what the SBA grant form looked like because the government is a catalyst for that kind of opportunity, especially when Uncle Sam drops that kind of money, everybody's paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So this app helped 300 businesses get access to $5 million in a finger snap. It took a 3-hour process to 30 minutes, and people from across the nation took notice of it. We were competing also with another app. I can't think of the name, but it was sponsored by Sean Combs, and I'd like to think that we made an impact even with our app to compete in that space. And I give a special shout out to Joseph Quintilio and Renapay and Swiss, which are his companies that he founded. He's got a big heart, and he didn't take any payment from us. He just wanted to figure out if what he had provided to the market would actually work. He wanted to help some black businesses. So that was how that relationship came together, and utilizing our resources in the form of our members was one of our biggest wins this year.
That right there, I mean, that is great. So how many members does the Dallas Black Chamber have?
As of today, as of this morning, a new member just joined. We checked the numbers. We have 504 members and growing. So there are people signing up as we speak. So next time we chat again, I hope to get you some higher numbers.
Okay. That's great. So now, Chase, you're partnering with Chase. So now you just talked about the banking relationship, mm-hmm. and that black business don't have a banking relationship. And so, because we are not fathered into this, we can't go back and back and back. But so how is Chase going to make a difference? How is Chase going? Why would you partner with them? What did they say to you that make you think that I want to do this? I really want to help black business.
So, and this is why I started with our tagline: constructive leadership since 1926. The constructive can mean a lot of different things. It can mean constructive criticism. It can mean constructive feedback. It can mean constructive building of a great program to make sure that it really flows well. And I like to think that with our partners, we keep a very open and honest dialogue about where we are. There were businesses who reached out to us, family members who own businesses, who said, hey, I've been calling Chase and I couldn't get a call back. Mm-hmm. And we addressed that directly with them. Earlier this year, they had about 30 members that sit in their C-suite under the CEO to come and talk to us about $30 billion worth of equity that they want to get into communities like communities across North Texas. And they asked us some very serious questions, and we told them, if you're going to ask us, we're going to tell you the truth the way we should. Mm-hmm. We're going to tell you from the perspective of the community members and businesses that we serve. And they agreed to that. They obliged us on that. Mm-hmm. And so we've been in conversation about how that's going to help, how that's going to work. We've been on a tour with them about some of the infrastructure in the region, and they're making some serious strides to that. Now, are they perfect? No, absolutely not by any metric. And when they're not, or if there's some blind spot that they have, or they miss some metric with us and the equity work they say they want to do, we call them to the mat on it. Now, it's not necessarily us pointing the finger to say Chase needs to fix all of this. This is all on Chase, because we also acknowledge that a lot of years of benign neglect and outright harm from our own government has also caused this situation. This is the making of policy decisions that go back as far as Reconstruction. So we also understand the value of that, and we know that there are more parties engaged in what's happened to our communities. But if anyone is invested in building with us, we also say you don't have to be black to build black. It's time to stop pointing at neighbors who don't have what we have and saying that those neighbors are weak because they're bad or because they do bad business. But instead to say, what is actually going wrong? What could we do to help as a strong nation? And if this is the largest economy, why does this the communities around that large economy not all look like we are a wealthy nation?
Right.
And they believe in that. And so we're pushing Jamie Dimon and other CEOs of other banks to also get engaged to make sure that every American has access to what any capitalist needs to be a great capitalist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're working through those details. And you know, if conversations continue to move this way, we're hoping that we see thousands of businesses here in the North Texas region invested in.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, we're also pushing a number of special programs and projects that we think will help not only talk about and point at the red lines that we see, mm-hmm. but actually start to break down some of the bulwark that keeps us from the funding.
Wow, that's great. I mean, that's great. I look forward to seeing that in the future. So here's another question. You know, it happens to most people, credit, bad credit. And so how is the chamber helping businesses, you know, get that credit right? you know, I heard years ago about using your credit, your Social Security card, and then you, there's this other number. I can't remember what it is called, you know, but you can get another number and it's that you can build your credit on. So do y'all even talk about that? Because I know how important that is, and sometimes can credit be recovered? I mean, can we get it right?
Absolutely. So there are two things the Chamber is really focused on in regard to credit. One is helping businesses actively clean up their credit.
Okay.
You know, the Black community, there's a number of ways that your credit could have been ruined out the gate. Let's just start there.
That's real. And then
you hit it on the head when you talked about the EIN number.
Mm-hmm.
The number separate from your personal Social Security,
absolutely.
Which if you are in business, you should absolutely have those things separated.
Yes.
The business is its own entity, and it should be protected, and it should be covered. And if you are not attached to the business in that way with your Social Security, then if they sue the business, you at least have some thin veil of protection from the assets, your personal assets from your business.
Right.
So that's number one, is helping people clean up their credit. And there are a number of resources that we offer, either as, you know, folks that actually have businesses that help you clean up your credit, or we just talk through metrics of paying down your debt and actually helping you figure out how you're going to clean it up.
Okay.
That's one side of it, is working with a litany of experts to that end. The other side is special programming like the Guaranteed Pool Fund, which we're trying to lift off the ground now. And the Guaranteed Pool Fund operates differently than any other funds that are currently in the market. And if we are successful, this will be the first fund in the region of this magnitude. It'll be the second Guaranteed Pool Fund of its kind. And to make the explanation of it simple as a non-finance person, the Guaranteed Pool Fund is kind of like a guarantee. Instead of auntie who loves you paying, guaranteeing, you know, your business or for a bank loan, instead then large foundations and intermediaries like the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce and communities and counties like Dallas County, who declared racism a public health crisis and a public health issue, could now weigh in and be guarantors for you. And it's unfunded guarantees, meaning that no money is actually exchanged, but we look at the balance sheets of these different groups and we pressure test them to see that in the case of a pandemic or some kind of major calamity, they could still actually hold up their guarantees. And the way it works is if you're a Black business and you're a part of this program, or a business from any community of color, and you walk into the bank and your credit is a problem for them wanting to loan you money, the guarantees from these large foundations and intermediaries like the Chamber make you less of a credit risk. And there are some redundancies and safety measures built in so that a business can't just come and get the loan, default on it and walk away guilt-free. But, you know, there are metrics to make sure that we have the right businesses who are part of the program. But it's designed to help businesses who should be able to walk into a bank and get access to credit. And it values them, and it takes away the bank's ability to say, well, we're just worried about them being credit risk or flight risk, so we won't make the loan.
Wow.
So, and not only that, WFAA, James McGee, and a number of other organizations are working on the Fair Banking Ordinance, which would help major cities look at how a bank is loaning to communities of color. And if they're not making those loans, then the city would pull its tax dollar investments from us, from those banks,
mm-hmm.
and the banks that do actually loan to Black and brown customers. So those are a few ways we're trying to help leverage our name, leverage our platform to really help the members of our community that we serve.
Well, I mean, you know what? That just makes you want to be a member. You need to be a member. It's really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I really love that. Terry Allen says hello. He says he's your number one fan. He has a question. He says, what is your top priority for Chamber for 2022, and how can others help?
Well, a top priority of ours is to really add jobs. We want to figure out how we help these growing Black businesses really add jobs and really grow the economy. If the economy is basically built off small businesses, if over 50% of all those hired in our city work for small businesses, then we have a huge critical role to play in growing the economy. And with so many African Americans and Black folks here in Dallas and around the Metroplex and just in between us in Houston, how do we create the culture and tell the story of Black Dallas? We get a call every day from somewhere like Chicago or even in some cases Atlanta, LA, asking, you know, if I move my business to Dallas, do you have some flex office space where my come in and feel comfortable. I just need a floor of business space. Or, hey, I just need a couple of corner offices to close the deals. But I'd like a view of downtown. The Chamber owns about 7 properties in the South Dallas area. One of those properties we get a lot of comments on because the building is starting to come down. And it's structurally unsound. So we're waiting on some pending environmental tests to see if we need special abatement for the building. We're also looking at developing that property, and we've been in talks with the city and in talks with some investors and some developers about what we could build in the South Dallas community that would be a flagship catalyst to all the different developments that are happening around the city to really capsize what we can do in that community. We would like to have something in South Dallas where we can get a cup of coffee, where you'd have more than one bank, one ATM. We could have some kind of flex kitchen space that would allow the State Fair to continue to be the incubator. We could send them even more cool items to sell and maybe even spur some restaurants from that kind of economic development. So a lot of different focuses in terms of economic development, but mostly helping to build small businesses and build their capacity to hire more.
All right, so tell our listening audience, how can they become a member of the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce?
So you can become a member by going to dbcc.org, and that's DallasBlackChamberofCommerce.org, and you can click on the membership tab. There are Join Now buttons everywhere. Okay. If you're already a member of our newsletter, you can see where you can join there. And if you are interested in being part of the cash flow series that we're going to do with JP Morgan Chase, then you can go to our website, click on Chamber Events, and you'll see it in the calendar. You can also go to our Facebook page, which will also take you back to the website, and you'll see the events listed there. You'll also see the Join Now tabs where you can become a member. And finally, if you just have any questions, you can email us at info@dbcc.org, and a team member will reach out to you with some details.
Okay, so when does your, tell us about this, the event, tell us about the event that's coming up and when it is and how can people sign up for it?
So the event with Chase is going to be a 3-part series really exploring cash flow and going much deeper than we went today. So you'll get a lot of metrics and a lot of the basics of cash flow. And you can sign up by going to the website and looking at our calendar of events. And you can sign up and register there to the Zoom link. You can also go to the Facebook page and register there. And you can pull down the tab of different events on our Facebook page, and you can register to be a part. All of the events are in the evening, and they're going to be on Tuesdays. And we're kicking off on November the 16th. So next week, we will be starting our cash flow series. And we've got presenters who've worked with every group, like Black Enterprise, all the major names, and they've held large sessions and are excited to do so. If you'd like to be a part, we sure would like to have you.
Okay. Well, I thank you so much, Mr. Blair. You have been great today. I mean, I really enjoyed this conversation. I really enjoyed the fact that we got to cover a lot of stuff. And you just made it clear how important it is to be a member of the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. And y'all make those businesses legit. You know what I mean? You make them, you just make them have pride in themselves. And then when they have pride in themselves, there's no telling where they could go and how high they could reach, right?
And you know, I give that back to the businesses that make us. We are a membership organization, and without our Black businesses and businesses who believe in what we're doing and the causes we serve, we would not exist. The businesses who join give us the power to speak, and we help use that voice to get policies that we think will help us. And more importantly, you know, I come from a family of small business owners. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the chicken shack that people think is just a chicken shack is an economic generator. It's sending people to college. It's giving jobs out. You know, that small church with 50 members mm-hmm. has programming, and it's mm-hmm. helping folks. And keeping them thriving is going to help build community more than anybody can ever imagine. So those small businesses are the economy. And the pandemic showed us more than ever that we need each other to survive. And some of those small businesses are cornerstones. And they mean so much to everything we're doing and how we generate businesses and opportunities. So we love our small businesses. They help keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. They help policy. And they help build this ecosystem. We are the support. And we know our place. So we, if you want to be a member, just know that everything you give to us in terms of your time, talent, and treasure go to help other Black businesses. So help us help more businesses.
Wonderful. Thank you again, Ms. Belair. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Come back soon and let's talk more about this cash flow stuff. I can't wait to hear more about that.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share.
You're welcome. Thank you. Take care.
Okay.
All right. That was great. Did y'all get something out of that? I hope y'all had pens and papers out there writing and getting something out of that. I mean, go join the chamber. Join the Dallas Black Chamber. They have so many different services to help you in your business, to help you get funded. I mean, you know, you got to do it. That's just paramount. That's just paramount. You got a business, you got to be a part of the chamber. So anyway, this has been a great day, a fantastic show. We have been inspired today. We have been educated today. We have been, excited about what's going on and what's happening. And we have found resources for just about everything, for everyone, for Black women, for mothers, for business owners. Oh, wow. It's been a blessing. And we even got to talk a little decorating. We got to talk about the holidays. We got to talk about how to make our homes welcoming to our family during this season. And you know what? It's been a great blessing. I want to thank all of my guests today. I want to thank Lee Hickenbottom Butler with Akin. I want to thank her. I want to thank Shalon Clark with Your Design Redefined. And then I want to thank Harrison Blair with the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. Very special people with special gifts and are willing to share with all of us here on From Marvel with Love and those who listen and chime in. Thank you again for tuning in today. It's been great. I look forward to doing it again next week with some more guests that are going to be exciting. So tune in to me for Marvel with Love as we share information and insight about the issues of today. I share things that women need to know concerning their marriage, their health, their education, their employment, family, faith, and careers, being a single parent, and financial security. And it all comes from a special place of love. I thank you again. And this is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to learn to live our best lives, by sharing our testimonies with one another and sharing information, because knowledge is power. And we've been gifted by God with his power. So let's speak those promises that God has made to us out in the universe. Speak them every day. Every time you think that it's not right, speak it. And everything that God has promised you will come back fulfilled and never, ever void. Thank you again for tuning in today to From Marvel with Love. And I want to make sure you remember what is happening through the week just by checking our papers, Texas Metro News at www.texasmetronews.com. That's www.texasmetronews.com. And Garland Journal, which is www.garlandjournal.com. That's www.garlandjournal.com.
garlandjournal.com. And when you check out Garland Journal, there's what we call Around Garland in the paper, and you can find things that are happening in that neck of the woods for those of you who kind of live in that part of town, that north and east part of town. Check out Garland Journal. It hits the streets on the first and the third Thursdays of every month. And, of course, you'll also be checking out Texas Metro News that hits the streets every Thursday. And we would love for you to be part of our e-blast, our daily newsletter. And all you have to do is send out an email to editor@texasmetronews.com. That's editor@texasmetronews.com. Send us out that with your name and your email on it, and then we will put you on our list, and then you will be able to see it in your inbox every single day. And it is awesome. It is awesome to find out what's happening in your neck of the woods and even in the country. You know, we try to shed a little bit of light on all of that as much as we can. So I want to say thank you once again, and I want to leave you with my favorite song, Mary J. Blige, Just Fine, because guess what? When you look in the mirror, you got to love what you're looking at. Have a good one.
You know I love music, and every time I hear something hot, it makes me want to move. It makes me want to have fun, but it's something about this joint right here. This joint right here.